your March Madness fix.
Puck, baseline, up for the shot, dive, off the glass, the game is over.
Gonzaga, the slipper still fits.
It's over, Michigan has won a national championship.
Got a feeling.
Holy mackerel, holy mackerel.
Tonight's gonna be a good night.
The shot.
Yes! It's the shot by Tate George, wins it.
Williams could tie it with a three. He does!
Oh.
Smart takes the shot.
Oh. Indiana wins the championship.
So now Valpo's going to have to go the length of the court. It's to Jenkins, the Drew for the win.
Gone! Oh. Drew did it. Valpo has won the game. A miracle.
Wittenberg. Oh, it's a long.
Pass to Leitner. Puts it up.
Yes! Kamara gets it ahead. Cooper out in front of everybody. Gets it to Katie Douglas. Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
You're home for the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament 96-1. WSBT. Darren Pritchard with you. On this Tuesday, March the 13th of 2018, the madness gets underway tonight. First four action in Dayton at 6:40. It's LIU Brooklyn taking on Radford, a pair of 16 squaring off in an East Region first four matchup. The Nightcap, the Bonnies of St. Bonaventure, take on UCLA, a pair of 11s from the East Region. We will not have those games tonight, but tomorrow, when there is more first four action, Texas Southern versus North Carolina Central and Syracuse taking on Arizona State, you will hear those games live on WSBT Radio. And of course, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, wall to wall, Westwood One coverage of this great NCAA men's basketball tournament. We do not have the first four games tonight because we have some Fighting Irish basketball from Purcell Pavilion. It's an NIT first round matchup. Mike Bray's Irish will take on Hampton. Opening tip, 9 o'clock. Pre-game at 8:40. And we'll have all the action for you on WSBT Radio. If you would like to attend tonight's game, a very reasonable ticket, just $10 to enjoy the Irish tonight. And it is general admission seating, so you can sit wherever you would like tonight. So if you are an individual that sits in the upper bowl normally, a chance to sit lower tonight at Purcell Pavilion. Tickets are available right now at UND.com. Of course, you can walk up to the box office tonight and get your tickets as well. Again, just $10 general admission for Notre Dame and Hampton tonight at 9 o'clock. All right, here's what we have scheduled for today. We're hoping to hear from Jordan Cornett in a couple of moments, the former Irish basketball player. He is a part of the Indy Radio Network and many other now media outlets, including ESPN 1000. Also, we've got a football segment coming up at the bottom of this hour. A lot of things happening with NFL free agency starting tomorrow. The Chicago Bears very active in the period where you can talk to players and agents before the signing period starts tomorrow. They have two players lined up ready to sign. We'll tell you who coming up in just a little bit. My five question of the day in about 40 minutes. On the Notre Dame football team, who are the men of mystery? Dr. Evil's boys, I guess. Players who have lacked playing time or the opportunity because they're a little bit of a mystery on the team. And they have something to prove this spring. We'll get Eric's list coming up in just a little bit. Next hour, Dave Johnson, who covers Hampton basketball for the Daily Press of Newport News, Virginia. He'll join us to talk about Notre Dame's opponent tonight. We have Rapid Fire coming up in just a little bit. And we'll get you ready for the NIT matchup from this standpoint. There's going to be some rules changes tonight and throughout the NIT. And we're going to talk about what you should expect tonight if you're going to listen to the game on WSBT Radio. It's also going to be on TV, or maybe you're attending the game. There are going to be some different ways this game is going to be played. So we will pass along what to expect, including, I'll tease you right now, you will have plenty of opportunities for refreshment and bathroom breaks, because from what we're told, each of the timeouts in this four-quarter game are going to be 3 minutes long. a little longer than normal. So if you're at home or maybe at the game, you'll have a little extra time to take care of business before the ball gets put back into action. So rather bizarre, but that's what's happening. We do have some big news surrounding the NCAA tournament. This just broke within the last couple of minutes. And if you're an individual that is heavily involved in brackets, of course, we know it's just for fun. Nothing else other than pride at stake. We do want to let you know that there is an injury to the Virginia Cavaliers, the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. It was just announced. 6'7 redshirt freshman DeAndre Hunter is out for the NCAA tournament with a broken wrist. Hunter comes off the Cavalier bench and plays half the game, 19 minutes. He is their fourth leading scorer at 9.2 points per game, and he is also grabbing 3.5 rebounds a ball game for Virginia. Now, recently, when the Cavaliers knocked off the Irish 62-57 in Charlottesville to wrap up the regular season, Hunter played 25 minutes against the Fighting Irish, and he accumulated 10 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, and a block, and was 1-of-1 from the three-point line, 3-of-9 from the field, 3-of-5 from the free throw line. So this is Virginia's 6'7 redshirt freshman. Again, the top guy coming off the bench, DeAndre Hunter, is done for the season. He will not play in the NCAA tournament. The top overall seed loses DeAndre Hunter to a broken wrist. So very, very bad news for the Virginia Cavaliers, who are going to try to get to the Final Four. Really the only thing that's eluded Coach Bennett, as he has really turned around this Virginia basketball program with great defense and very efficient on the offensive side of the basketball. So DeAndre Hunter, done for the tournament. So the Cavaliers, that's a little bit of a blow to their chances. Now, even before I had that news, I have the old four seed Arizona ousting the Virginia Cavaliers in the Sweet 16, so I'll stick with that pick for now. I wouldn't recommend it for everybody, but I'm going to bank on those Zona Wildcats continuing to play a little stronger basketball as they did down the stretch. All right, Eric, how are you today? Good to see you.
Good here. How are you?
I'm lovely. I'm doing just lovely. Looking forward to some basketball tonight. We have a ton of basketball over the next few days. Truly one of the fun weeks of the year. If you're a college basketball fan or a sports fan in general. We've got the Irish tonight, of course, in the NIT, and it's all about what they're going to offer us. Is this going to be a team that's going to be motivated and ready to play and just want to go out and prove everybody that, you know what, we should have been in the NCAA tournament? Or are they going to come out and just go through the motions for a while? Against Hampton, you can get away with that. But in the next game against Penn State and Temple, a little better competition could be a different story. You know, I really expect this group to have some motivation tonight. I think it's a proud group. I think Bonzi, missing 15 games, just wants to play basketball. And Matt Farrell wants to play with Bonzi Colson. I think everybody wants to play with Matt Farrell and Bonzi Colson. So despite the disappointment, you know, I just have a really good feeling that if they don't get off to a good start, they're going to find that rhythm, and I think we're going to get a lot of oomph from the Fighting Irish tonight.
I would think so. I think that they, you know, Mike Bray talked about that he prepared them for the NIT possibility, and I think that, again, it's fun playing with Bonzi at this point. You've missed him for 15 games. You know, he just came back. Why not have a blast and see where this takes you? I mean, yep. You know, the NIT banner is not something that's particularly coveted, but why not go out and have fun and try to win a championship?
I asked on my Twitter account today at 961 SportsBeat, this was my question of the day. Notre Dame basketball will face Hampton in the NIT tonight at 9 on 96.1 WSBT. It's also on TV. The question was, will you listen to, watch, or attend tonight's game? And so far the voting shows 66% of fans say yes, I will listen, watch, or attend the game, and only 34% said, nope, I'm done with basketball for this season. So, like to see that. I do know there is a push right now to encourage fans to come out to Purcell Pavilion. A lot of tickets are available for tonight's game. Again, it's just $10, general admission seating. You can sit wherever you would like. It is a 9 o'clock game, but the students aren't in town, so if you're interested, this would be something hopefully you would be interested in, and head on out and see the Irish at least one more time at Purcell Pavilion. You could see them three more times if they continue to win. And now that we know that the Notre Dame women's basketball team will play the Friday-Saturday portion of the NCAA
Friday,
tournament.
Friday-Sunday, right?
I'm sorry, Friday-Sunday portion of the bracket. Are you sure?
Yeah,
it is. That's right. That's right. I'm sorry. Sort of confused myself with the dates. So maybe the Irish men's basketball team plays Monday? Because I would think the teams are going to practice on Saturday. Notre Dame and the 8-9 winner for the women's tournament. Maybe you can fit it in. They practice middle of the day. You play the Irish at night. I don't know. That might get tough with the NCAA tournament being here. Maybe just wait till Monday. Who knows? But at least we know now the Irish play on Friday. They're a number one seed in Spokane. And they have a 100% chance of moving on to the Sweet 16.
I don't think you were here when I covered Notre Dame in the NIT. They had to work around the Home and Garden Show, which was
scheduled in
the Joy Center. So they only could use the lower bowl. The Home and Garden Show people were nice. I mean, they could have said, hey, look, we rented this place. But they said, hey, we'll give you the lower bowl. So because Notre Dame was so confident that nothing was happening with that basketball team, they got an NIT that year.
Well, Eric, I think all teams and whoever runs the stadiums that they play in should anticipate no NIT action. That's the goal. You don't want to see games there late in the year, so you schedule accordingly.
Well, it was the opposite for that team because the thought was they wouldn't be able to reach the level of the NIT, let alone the NCAA.
So Irish and Hampton
the next year.
Yeah, Irish and Hampton tonight at 9 o'clock on WSBT. I know Jordan Cordett's very busy right now with a lot of ventures. We have not been able to make contact with him, so we'll try to reschedule. But I know he has a ton of things going on. He was on the NBC Sports Network doing A-10 tournament games. He's on CBS Sports breaking down brackets. He has his ESPN 1000 job. So he's got a lot of irons in the fire right now. So hopefully we can catch up with him at some point. So since we don't have Jordan, let me just play one soundbite. This is going to be an interview we're going to play back tomorrow on the program. But earlier today, Sean Steyers and I spoke with Gary Parrish, CBS Sports College Basketball Insider, hosts a radio show at 92.9 in Memphis. And we talked a lot of NCAA tournament and, of course, Notre Dame basketball with Gary. And one of the questions that we started out with, what about Notre Dame missing the NCAA tournament? Do you agree with the decision? Does it make sense? Did they get a fair shake? And here's what Gary Parrish from CBS Sports had to say about the Fighting Irish.
I actually do, and I hate to say that because I'm a big fan of Mike and what he's been able to do with that program, but I did not think Notre Dame was going to get in, and the reason is because I had listened to Bruce Rasmussen, the committee chair, talk enough and then actually had conversations with him in studio leading up to Selection Sunday, and he was hammering home the point that Notre Dame lost with Fonzie Colson to Ball State and Indiana. His point being, you can't assume they wouldn't have taken some of those losses in the ACC schedule with Fonzie because when they did have Fonzie, they were still vulnerable to inferior teams. Obviously, Matt's absence complicates things as well. Long story not so long, I did not expect to see the Irish in the bracket. Now, if you were doing it a different way, if you were just saying, here's our 32 automatic bids, now give me the 36 best teams in America right now, Notre Dame's in that easily. But it is a body of work issue, and the body of work wasn't there.
And I get that line of thinking, but as we've talked about on our show, Gary, I mean, Villanova, Duke, North Carolina, you can go down the line of teams with much higher seeds. They had bad losses early, too, and were able to overcome it. Was there just sort of too much on Bonzi in this whole process for the committee?
I think that the committee, like if Notre Dame would have went, I don't know, just avoided those bad losses early with Fonzie Colson, I think they're able to present their case to the committee in an entirely different way. They're able to say, look, here's what we were with Fonzie Colson. Here's what we were without Fonzie Colson. We have Fonzie Colson now. Judge us on that. But the issue becomes, when you lose to Ball State in Indiana with Fonzie Colson, the committee pushes back a little bit. Like I said, if the goal was to just simply get the best teams in the tournament, Notre Dame should have been in that. Mike's got one of the best teams in America, but they really focus on best bodies of work, best resumes, and that's where the Fighting Irish just came up, I think, a little short. And, like, obviously just barely short because on Sunday morning they were actually in the field.
Again, that's Gary Parrish, CBS Sports College Basketball Insider, also hosts a radio show in Memphis on 92.9. We'll play the complete interview tomorrow. We also ask him about who is the ACC team to watch, who's the best team, who has the best chance to go the farthest from the ACC, and we ask about Purdue, Michigan State, Michigan. We take care of our Big Ten fans as well, so we'll play back that entire interview tomorrow. But, you know, that's why we spent a couple of weeks on this program looking at the good and the bad of the Irish resume, and how many times did we mention the names Ball State and Indiana in our conversation? That was a part of their resume they never fixed. And what I mean is, if you pick up some of those quality ACC victories, which they always do under Mike Bray, you sort of cross off those losses. But when you look at the victories of Notre Dame, the 8 victories in the ACC, there just wasn't enough of those eye-poppers, those big wins that would erase losses to Indiana, Ball State, and even Georgia Tech in ACC play. That's why we pointed it out for a couple of weeks. They still almost got in, but if you don't lose to Ball State, you don't lose to Indiana, you're probably not sitting at 68 going into Selection Sunday. You might be a little farther up the pecking order.
Well, the one thing I thought was kind of interesting, last night I happened to catch Freddie and Fitz on ESPN, and they were talking to Greg Shaheen, former NCAA exec, and he said that last third of the season weight used to be stated specifically in the rules.
I know.
And he said that the reason they took it out was because they wanted the language to be less specific about which, how many games that constituted, whether it be 10 or 12 or whatever. But he said he thought this committee got way too far away from that, that they did not include enough of that with Oklahoma being 4-11 down the stretch and not winning a single road game in calendar year 2018. And so I think there's going to be a revisiting of that next year where that would wait. Now, would that have helped Notre Dame? Not necessarily, because some of the Miss Bonzi games fall in that last third of the season window. But it probably would have taken a little bit of the sting out of the early Ball State and Indiana losses. You can't remove those games altogether because that's when you play non-conference games. But, again, you know, I'm not pounding the table either way. I think Notre Dame deserved to get in, but it was such a strange circumstance. You kind of were inventing rules to get them in. But, you know, I do think that end of the season thing, that's when you really are the team who you are. And I think that has to count more.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. We'll talk more Fighting Irish basketball next hour. One of the individuals who covers Hampton basketball, Dave Johnson from the Daily Press of Newport News in Virginia, will join us. And we'll also get you ready for the rules changes that you will see in tonight's game, including the game being 4 quarters and some other changes on the floor. But coming up next, we're going to talk some college football and some National Football League news about former Irish wide receiver Kevin Stefferson. And it's going to be a wild day tomorrow in the National Football League. It is the start of free agency. Signings are lining up, and the Bears very active today. We'll tell you what to expect when free agency opens tomorrow when we come back. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat is presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. This is your home of tonight's Notre Dame-Hampton game and the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament, 96-1 WSBT. We'll get back to college basketball conversation in just a little bit. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Again, the breaking news from the college basketball world this afternoon. DeAndre Hunter, Virginia bench player, ACC Sixth Man of the Year, averaging in 19 minutes of action, 9 points and 4 rebounds, is done for the year with a broken wrist, a big blow to the overall number one seeded Cavaliers. And don't forget, you can join us for our WSBT Bracket Madness at WSBTRadio.com. It is free, and we have some cash prizes at stake. So join us at WSBTRadio.com for our WSBT Bracket Madness. Let's get to some football conversation. And, Eric, we begin with some news about a former Fighting Irish football player, wide receiver Kevin Stefferson. I'll read from the South Bend Tribune, ND Insider story. Former University of Notre Dame wide receiver Kevin Stefferson was sentenced Monday after violating his probation in December. Stefferson was sentenced to 180 days in Fulton County Jail, according to the Superior Court, with time served. He still has about 47 days left to serve. The former Irish football player was first arrested in August when he and four teammates were pulled over in Fulton County. Stefferson was charged with possession of marijuana, but took a plea agreement to have the charges removed if he stayed out of trouble for 1 year. He has had issues since that particular arrest. So Stefferson, Eric's going to spend some time behind bars, and this is a young man that may have just wasted a golden ticket to be a part of this university, be a part of this football program. And just unfortunately, he has had just many missteps along the way.
Well, hopefully he can pull it together. The one thing that we left out in that story is I think when you have a misdemeanor, that 180-day sentence gets halved to 90. I think he served 43. That's where you come up with the 47 days. Because he hasn't been in jail for over 100 days. It's been less than that. And I will give WNDU credit. They dug a little bit deeper on this story. They mentioned that Kevin is no longer enrolled in school. They talked to the lawyer that was representing him today, and that he plans to go home to Jacksonville when he's released and enter a rehabilitation center. So give NDU a tip of the cap for the reporting there.
And step one for Kevin Stefferson. In terms of the current Fighting Irish wide receiving core, Eric, as you take a look at the depth chart, there doesn't appear to be that alpha wide receiver, the guy that could catch a majority of the passes from the Notre Dame quarterbacks. Is this a balanced enough wide receiving core to offset the fact there may not be that one guy who could grab you 70 passes or that one guy you always look to on third down?
Well, they didn't have that necessarily last year, at least if you look at the statistics. Everybody was kind of bunched at the top with Equanimeous and Claypool being 1-2.
At the start of the year, you would have said EQ would be that guy.
Right, because he was the year before. I think what's more important is for them to figure out how they want to put these receivers on the field, and if they have the stretch the field concept receiver, and it's Michael Young or Braden Lindsey, somebody like that with very little experience, can they get them to the point where Brandon Wimbush is going to have confidence in them to be able to get open and to outrun defenses and do the things that Kevin Stefferson did when he was eligible, and Will Fuller did before that when he was on the team. Torrey Hunter in that role a little bit in 2016. I think that's what's most important, because what you have, Darren, is you have a glut of big athletic receivers. You have Miles Boykin. You have Javon McKinley finally healthy. You have Kevin Austin. You have Micah Jones. You have Chase Claypool. And you're going to have to spread those guys between at least two positions and maybe three to get everybody on the field. At slot, as a true slot receiver, Chris Fink is your number one option. I think Lawrence Keys the third is going to get a look there in June. But it's that outside, wide field, run past people receiver that you don't have a lot of. So they're going to have to kind of figure out what their best configuration was. And they never really figured it out last year, Darren. They put Chase Claypool there for a while. Then Kevin Stefferson came back. Eventually, he shook the rust. That seemed to be kind of the best way. Then he gets suspended. And in the bowl game, they put Equanimeous out there and put Miles Boykin on the field. And my goodness, Miles Boykin was pretty darn good. So maybe they were missing something by him not getting more opportunities during the season. And that's what this spring has got to be about, is for them to figure out that equation. So I don't necessarily think it needs to be an alpha dog, but if Michael Young or one of the freshmen isn't ready to take it over, you've got to play a little bit different. You've got to play with bigger receivers and do it that way.
It would seem, now he has 2 years left, so it could happen at any time, but it would appear that this would be the fall that Chase Claypool blossoms. We've been building to this point from Canada, playing obviously much better competition than he has ever seen. And, you know, even coming to Notre Dame, we weren't even sure what position he was going to play. Was he going to be a defensive player? Ended up being a wide receiver, made a huge impact on special teams as a freshman. Took steps this year, but I guess all of us are just eager for him to blossom sooner than maybe should be expected, and it didn't happen as quickly last year as we hoped, so it sure seems like that this would be the opportunity, and this is the year where Claypool becomes that more consistent wide receiver. He's got the route tree down and builds some chemistry to Brandon Wimbush, Ian Book, or whoever plays quarterback.
I would agree with you. He's not going to get contact work this spring because he's coming off a shoulder injury. So the thing is, Darren, what's his best position? I think his best position is actually the W, which is the receiver on the close side of the field. But again, you've got all these guys kind of stacked over there. He seemed to be, you know, a decent slot receiver. Do you put him back out on the open side of the field and try to get him to run past people?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what they've got to kind of figure out with Chase. Where can they maximize that potential? Because Darren, he has the highest ceiling of all the receivers on this team. And so figure out where you can maximize that talent. I think Brian Kelly has always been just a little bit leery that Chase sometimes goes through the motions a little bit. He wants Chase to work as hard as a walk-on. And when he sees that, I think the magic kind of happens with him. But he's got to be at the right position at that point.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Read the latest on the Irish, South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com. To the National Football League, free agency opens tomorrow. For the last few days, there has been a window for teams to negotiate with players and agents leading up to the signing period starting tomorrow. And here is what we expect to happen tomorrow. We'll start with the Bears, and then we'll get to the quarterback carousel that's going to really roll tomorrow. The Chicago Bears, it looks like they are going to try to build up that offense around Mitchell Trubisky out of North Carolina, entering his second year as quarterback for the Chicago Bears. He needs help at wide receiver. Their wide receiving core last year that they went with second half of last year, I don't know you could find a much weaker wide receiving core this year or many years in the National Football League, but they're trying to build it up because today the rumor is that Jaguars wide receiver Allen Robinson will sign with the Chicago Bears tomorrow. He is only 24 years old, out of Penn State. He played three downs last year, suffered a devastating knee injury, missed the rest of the season, but the two previous years, Robinson, a big factor down in Jacksonville, and remember, Blake Bortles is his quarterback. He still, in 2015, had 80 catches for 1,400 yards and 14 touchdowns. Dropped back a bit in 2016, 73 receptions, 883 yards, and 6 touchdowns. So Allen Robinson expected to sign with the Bears tomorrow, and he immediately becomes the team's number one wide receiver. Also, it's expected the Bears will sign 26-year-old tight end out of the University of Florida, and he played last year with the world champion Philadelphia Eagles. It's Trey Burton. As the Eagles' number two tight end last year, 23 passes, 248 yards, 5 touchdowns. Zach Ertz, their number one guy. Burton was two. And you might remember Burton in the Super Bowl. He was the tight end that threw the second quarter touchdown pass to Nick Foles. sparking the Eagles to a big late first half touchdown against New England. So it looks like the Bears will add Robinson and Burton to their offense. Mitchell Trubisky's got to be smiling about these particular decisions. One other wide receiver note, the Packers have released Jordy Nelson. They've also lined up tight end Jimmy Graham, formerly of the Saints and the Seahawks. So it looks like Graham will join Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay. But Jordy Nelson, who has been a big part of their team for so many years, he is going to be cut. And I wonder if the Chicago Bears would be interested. Do you go after Jordy Nelson? I've heard some speculation he's maybe lost a step. But if in the Bears' estimation, he hasn't. Boy, that would be a really intriguing guy to add to their offense as they try to build around the second-year pro out of North Carolina. Jordy, what do you think?
And you realize once this free agent spree starts, all those mock drafts we've been looking at change. Go into the trash can. They all change.
Yeah. And, of course, DeShone Kizer, now a backup for the Green Bay Packers. What an opportunity to learn from Aaron Rodgers.
Absolutely. Whatever it turns into, that's what DeShone needs at this point. You know, is that opportunity to learn from somebody like that.
Remember all the national media members that ripped on Brian Kelly for saying that DeShone needed a little more seasoning, even though he said he was happy he's going to the NFL, but he said he needed a little more seasoning. Well, Mr. Kelly might know what he's talking about. And you know what? Those comments were taken out of context as well by many, many people.
Absolutely.
All right. Also, the quarterback carousel in the National Football League. Kirk Cousins, the highly sought-after Washington Redskins quarterback, he is going to sign with the Minnesota Vikings tomorrow. And how about this? 3 years, $86 million, and all $86 million guaranteed. I have never heard anything like that. I would have to think that's unprecedented for a contract that big, every dollar being guaranteed in the National Football League. That's crazy.
Right. Because the NFL contracts are notorious for not being guaranteed, but maybe that's why he picked the shorter term.
Very well could be. He bet on himself a couple of years ago and not signing a long-term deal with Washington. He got tagged a couple of times, and boy, it's worked out very, very well for Kirk Cousins, and he's still got another big contract to come after that three-year deal because he's still a reasonably young guy in the National Football League. So Cousins goes to Minnesota. It'll be official tomorrow. So the starting quarterback that led them to the NFC Championship game, Case Keenum, is available. And in the wee hours of this morning, it was reported first by Adam Schefter of ESPN, Keenum is going to be headed to the Denver Broncos, who are in desperate need for a quarterback. They have the number 5 overall pick in the draft. They still could go quarterback. As a Bronco fan, I'm still in belief Quentin Nelson would be perfect for their offensive line. And if the Broncos believe in Chad Kelly, the guy they drafted in the 7th round of Ole Miss last year, maybe they don't take a quarterback. Maybe they go with a guy like Quentin Nelson or Fitzpatrick from Alabama. Also, Drew Brees is going to stay in New Orleans. 2 years, $50 million for the old Boilermaker, and he gets 27 of that guaranteed. So basically, this year is guaranteed, and they'll see how Brees looks as a veteran quarterback in that system. They ran the ball so well. It was a down passing year for Brees for his standards because of the great running game they had in New Orleans. Sam Bradford, another Viking quarterback, he gets 1 year, $20 million from the Arizona Cardinals. And since we're talking about former Viking quarterbacks, here's another one. Teddy Bridgewater, the former Louisville Cardinal, he is reportedly working on a deal to be the starting quarterback for the J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. In other news, Sammy Watkins, $16 million a year, the former first-round wide receiver out of Clemson, he is now a part of the Kansas City Chiefs. And I mentioned Jimmy Graham going to the Packers, the outstanding tight end, going to play with Aaron Rodgers. But again, the Bears are going to sign Allen Robinson out of Jacksonville to add to their wide receiving core and tight end Trey Burton from Philadelphia. The Indianapolis Colts, crickets right now. They're just taking it all in. They're just watching Colts football this fall on 96.1 WSBT. You know, there's such a need for quarterbacks in the National Football League. Cousins is going to get $27.5 million. He has not won a playoff game yet. Tim Tebow has won more playoff games than Kirk Cousins. Does that make you a little nervous? Well, he hasn't had the greatest team around him in Washington. But then you see all these teams need a quarterback. It looks like that Keenum's going to get around $18, $19 million a year. Bradford is getting $20 million. Breeze is getting that 2 for $50 million with $27 million guaranteed. Teams have to overpay for possibly guys I think we could list as average or a little above average in the National Football League. But there is such a need, you have to overpay to try to make your football team just a little bit better. And Keenum's come on strong the last year and a half. He was terrific this year for Minnesota. Can he do that in Denver? We will find out very, very soon. All right, so that's the latest from the National Football League. It is 13 minutes in front of 6 o'clock. He's Eric Hansen. I'm Darren Pritchett. Irish basketball tonight at 9 o'clock, 8:40 pregame. It's Notre Dame and Hampton in the NIT. And once again, if you would like to go to the game tonight, $10 ticket. It is general admission seating. You can sit wherever you would like, and they are looking for some more fans to come on out and support this Irish basketball team as they try to push toward another trip to New York City and the NIT semifinals. They have to win 3 games to get to the NIT semifinals. When we come back, we return to Notre Dame football with the My 5 question of the day. Who are the Notre Dame football team's men of mystery for this season? We're basically saying players whose play has been limited. Maybe it's because there's been someone ahead of them. Maybe it's because they have not played well. And these guys have a lot to prove this spring. We'll go Dr. Evil on the My 5 question of the day coming up next on 96.1 WSBT.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM WSBT.
Today's My 5 question of the day. The Notre Dame football team, who is their men of mystery for the 2018 season? Players whose play has been limited. Maybe it's because they have not played well. Maybe it's because people have been in front of them. So there's a bit of mystery about these players, and they have something to prove. So we're looking for men of mystery. So how about some mood music to get Eric ready for his 5 answers? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's do this. There we go. We need men of mystery. So player number 5 on your list.
Well, I'm going with, yeah, baby, Alize Mack. And you could make a case for him being number 1, but his circumstances have really been self-inflicted. You know, he's gotten suspended. He missed a year because of academics. He's been inconsistent, had 2 catches over the last 7 games last year. And now he has real competition. Not that Durham Smythe wasn't real competition, but he's got some guys that are going to climb past him if he doesn't bring the consistency this spring, and that's Cole Kmet and Brock Wright.
Number 4 on your list.
Work with me, people.
Well, okay, I will work with you. And I'm going to work with you with Liam Eichenberg. You know, midway through his freshman season when he was redshirting, Brian Kelly said, you know what? He is so advanced, he's so talented, he could play any position he wants, but he's still looking to break through as a starter. And right now, Josh Lugg kind of has the inside track on being that 5th starter. So Liam has some work to do. You know, he was in a real tight battle with Tommy Kramer last year for right tackle, and then at the very end, Tommy Kramer and Robert Hainsey pulled away and formed a tag team.
I don't know if they're screaming at Austin or you. I'm not sure.
They're screaming at me.
We're looking for Notre Dame football's men of mystery this spring. Number 3.
Asmar Bilal. You know, he 2 years ago, he was auditioned to be Jalen Smith's replacement at weak side linebacker, and he had all spring to kind of do it because Tavon Coney and Greer Martini were recovering from surgeries. Those guys passed him up, and kind of the knock with him is he's raw, he's a tweener. He's got ability, Darren. If he can hone in on the nuances of the game, this is a guy that could be a starter at Rover.
We're up 2 now. Number 2 on your list.
Well, I'll tell you what. If heart and intellect counted for everything, Sean Crawford would be an All-American. And I think he had that physical talent as a freshman and even as a sophomore before his 2nd surgery in as many years. I think the The Achilles tendon surgery took more out of him than the ACL surgery. But he was healthy last year. He still made an impact, 32 tackles, had some turnovers. But if he can get that top-end speed back, Darren, at the deepest position group on this team, he could be even more impactful. He could be an elite player.
We are looking for Notre Dame football's men of mystery entering the spring. Alizé Mack, Liam Eichenberg, Asmar Bilal, Sean Crawford, and number one on your list is...
The most highly recruited wide receiver at Notre Dame since Michael Floyd in 2008. And that's Javon McKinley. Javon was an incredible performer at Centennial High School in Corona, California. Broke his leg midway through his freshman season. Last spring had to wear a red jersey, so he really didn't get much play. Then redshirted last year because Brian Kelly wanted him to be completely healthy when he started to compete again. And I think what stands in Javon's way is Miles Boykin, a big receiver. Micah Jones, early enrollee, big receiver. Kevin Austin, big receiver. There's Chase Claypool, big receiver. There's a lot of guys like him. But I'll say this about Javon. He's a guy that really is humble and a guy that's really willing to work. And there's not a lot of guys that are as highly recruited as him that are as humble as him. So it's going to be interesting to see what Javon looks like after relatively 2 years of inactivity.
There you go. Good job on the list.
Thank you.
Excellent work. You know, I wonder if there's an argument that Wimbush could be on this list.
I think you could put Brandon Wimbush. I think you could put Dante Vaughn on here. There's a couple other guys, Darnell Yule. But certainly Wimbush fits that category. But he is not blocked. You know, he has still got the clear path to number one if he's able to pull things together.
That's the My Five question of the day. Couple of minutes in front of the top of the hour. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, in the print section, Tom's got a really cool NIT notebook. The game story will be online because it's a 9 o'clock start. I actually did a story on the five men of mystery. And so you'll get all the expanded details on those guys. And of course, Darren, lots of NFL free agent signings, injuries to NCAA basketball players, and much, much more.
If the webpage would open to that music, that would be fantastic.
Boy, I wish maybe I could do that.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Sean joins me next, top of the hour, WSBT South.
Hi, this is Dan Patrick, and you're listening to South Bend's number one sports talk show, Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT.
Thank you, Dan. Dan Patrick on the air tomorrow at 10, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett with you this hour. Fighting Irish basketball in the National Invitational Tournament right here on WSBT Radio. 8:40 pregame, the opening tip with Jack Nolan on the call at 9 o'clock, and the legendary Bob Henning spinning the dials from courtside at Purcell Pavilion. So the Irish will take on Hampton, and in about 3 minutes, we will talk to one of the individuals that covers Hampton basketball, Dave Johnson, to offer his thoughts on this Hampton basketball team, and we'll find out that team's interest level. Because that's always the storyline every year in the NIT. When you have a team in it, how interested is the team going to be? And I said to Eric, I feel like Notre Dame's going to be, I think, more inspired than most. It may not show right away, but I think they're going to get rolling emotionally as the game goes on. And I fully expect them. I'm not going to say they're going to play a perfect game. It's still the NIT. You lose a little bit of that adrenaline not being in the NCAA, but I fully expect them to take this serious and play pretty decent tonight.
I would think so, too. You do wonder how they're going to kind of start. Are they going to be sluggish? What's the crowd, the atmosphere, the whole thing going to be like? How interested are they going to be? But I think that once the juices kind of get flowing, it'll all kick in, and it's still basketball, and they'll get going.
Again, 9 o'clock tip. You can hear it on 96.1 WSBT and the Fighting Irish. Have $10 tickets tonight at Purcell Pavilion. General admission seating. You can sit wherever you would like for tonight's basketball game. Before we get back to more on Notre Dame and Hampton, Just a reminder, the news of the day, if you have not turned in your bracket yet, if you want to think about changing your bracket, Virginia's DeAndre Hunter will miss the tournament with a broken wrist. The ACC Sixth Man of the Year played 19 minutes off the Virginia bench. Fourth leading scorer, 9 points, 3.5 rebounds, had 10 points in 25 minutes against Notre Dame in the ACC regular season finale for Virginia. He is a key part, not only offensively, but defensively for Tony Bennett's team.
Man, that...
huge loss.
Really rough, especially right here on the eve of the tournament and the whole thing. I doubt it would have affected Virginia seed-wise or anything because they were so good and they ended up being the number one seed. But still, that's a big blow for them, but their most important guy coming off the bench.
We have our WSBT Bracket Madness. You can take part at WSBTRadio.com. It's free. We have a little cash up for grabs. If you want to join us, it's free. What the heck? Give it a shot.
Why not?
And I filled mine out yesterday. And before the news, I had Virginia going down in the Sweet 16 to the Arizona Wildcats. So I wonder if more people are going to go in that direction now, darn it.
Double down.
Just leave your picks if you have Virginia. Just... Your first instinct's always right. Now, I'm not saying Arizona's definitely going to win now, but that definitely changes things.
I'm telling you what, I'm surprised at the chalk I ended up having on my brackets because I've been saying for weeks that I thought that I was expecting all these upsets.
It's
and
just hard.
You might have a low seed. Yeah, probably still going to have some low seeds getting in, advancing maybe at least to the Sweet 16 or Elite 8, but I'm just not seeing it right now.
I have three double digits in the Sweet 16.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. And my final four is a little more chalkish. And I know I don't want to steal from your rapid-fire questions or our predictions tomorrow, but I've got, in the final four, a 4, a 3, a 1, and a 3.
Mm.
And again, three double digits. No, actually, you know what? I'm going to take that back. I have two double-digit teams in the Sweet 16, but I have two double-digit seeds playing in the second round.
Okay.
We'll get to that tomorrow when we make some final projections for the NCAA tournament. But yeah, every year you go into this, you watch the regular season, and you think there's going to be upset after upset. And when you get the bracket in front of you, it's hard to pull the trigger.
It really is, because you see that New Mexico State, what do we know about New Mexico State? Who have they beaten? Marshall. There's some buzz on Marshall and Loyola Chicago and all these teams, but we just haven't seen them that much. This is where those guys make their name, is Thursday and Friday in the NCAA tournament, because they're going to be some of those double-digit seeds who are going to pull off some big upsets.
The Fighting Lou Hensons might be a factor in New Mexico State.
Mm-hmm.
Not trying to show my hand, but that's an intriguing team right now against a team that's a little banged up. We'll talk more about that on tomorrow's program.
Okay.
Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser on the Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT. Once again, we have Irish basketball coming up tonight, 8:40 pregame. Jack Nolan on the call at 9 o'clock from Purcell Pavilion as the Fighting Irish take on Hampton in an NIT first-round matchup. The winner gets either Penn State or Temple in round number two. Let's talk about this matchup with Dave Johnson. He covers Hampton for the Daily Press of Newport News in Virginia. Dave, it's Darren Pritchett. Thanks for taking a couple of moments. How are you this evening?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you so much. We just said this a moment ago. We always seem to say this when we talk about an NIT matchup. What will be the interest level of the teams involved? You know, Dave, we're not quite sure about the Fighting Irish, obviously being number 69 in the tournament committee's eyes, the last team out. It stung. It hurt. We expect them to play a fairly inspired basketball game tonight, at the very least. Your read on the Hampton players and the opportunity they have in front of them tonight?
Good question there. They obviously, like everyone else, had their sights set on the NCAA tournament, especially being in a one-bid league, and they were the top seed going into the tournament. They thought they were going to win. They played the sixth seed in the MEAC tournament and didn't pull it off. So they were quite upset afterwards. But I got to think that facing a program like Notre Dame, going to South Bend, which is a very historic college, very historic athletic program, will definitely pique their interest. Rather than if they were just playing a program that really didn't appeal to them that much.
Dave, how would you describe Hampton's style of play? It's a team that we haven't really got to see much of around here this year.
Yeah, they don't make ESPN a lot. except for tonight, come to think of it.
Yeah.
But they play... they're a very interesting team to watch play. They like to get up and down the floor. They average 80 points a game, and were held to 63 in the tournament final. So that kind of gives you an indication of why they weren't able to pull that out. They love to run. They're very guard-oriented with Jermaine Merrow, Kalen Fisher, and Malik Trent Street. All three are really solid backcourt players who can get to the rim and who can shoot as well. And they like to put pressure on an opponent too. But they've, other than Virginia this year, who they played early on in December, this will be a talent level they haven't really seen this year. Excuse me, Xavier too they played.
Dave, just to follow up on one player you mentioned, Merrow, Jermaine Merrow, a sophomore, averaging 18 points per game. What allows him to be so good offensively?
Well, he's not a terrific shooter. You can see that from his percentages. He's about 28-29% from the three-point line. What he does really well is he's pretty fearless. I mean, he's not a very big guy. I forget what they list him at, but he's probably not what they list him at.
6 foot.
I think he's probably not that.
Okay.
But he's very quick. He's very fearless, and he takes it to the hole, and he gets clobbered. And he bounces right back up, and he's a good free throw shooter. So he gets a lot of points at the line, and he's good at going to the rim. But then again, he's going to have to deal with Gebron. Is that how you say his name?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a big presence that again that you don't see a whole lot of in the MEAC.
Well, and speaking of that, in their two losses to Xavier and Virginia, and I mean, couple of big opponents, obviously, this year. They end up playing number one seeds, but they got out-rebounded pretty handily. Overall, for the season, it looks like they rebounded well, but is that a pretty big concern, do you think, tonight against a pretty good rebounding Notre Dame team with some size?
Oh, absolutely. That's going to be a big problem. Hampton has some height, but they don't have a lot of bulk. Their size, their 6'9 guys are pretty wiry and can run, but they're not really, you know, big muscular guys who can shove you around in the paint. They like to get up and down the floor too. They're big guys, so they don't have anybody who's like a big wide body in there who's gonna. And speaking of the paint, aren't they expanding it for this thing?
That's right.
That's right. From 12 to 16 feet.
Exactly. And then what's the other thing? 10-minute quarters.
The 3-point line's at 22 plus feet.
Oh, well, that won't stop them from jacking it up.
So anything across midcourt is available to them.
Yes, they'll take the shot. Merrow is fearless. He really is. It's his greatest strength and sometimes his biggest weakness. But he's got a lot of confidence, even if he's cold, and he'll still fire it up there.
Dave Johnson,
but a lot of those guys are like that.
Yeah, Dave Johnson, who covers Hampton for the Daily Press, Newport News, Virginia, joining us here on WSBT. Just some quick background, Dave. They obviously were co-champions of the MEAC, and as you mentioned, the number one seed in the tournament. This is their final year in the conference. They're moving to the Big South. What went into that decision?
Be honest with you, I think what went into it is that the MEAC is, to be honest with you, ranked at the low end, at the lowest end of conferences. I think it is the lowest this year, either that or the SWAC. I can't remember.
Okay.
And they feel like they've had some teams in the past that won the conference, like the team 2 years ago, for instance, that was actually a pretty talented team, but they were made a 16 seed and put against Virginia in the first round, and that went exactly as you expected. They feel like they can maybe be in a situation where they can get higher seeds. And when I say higher, I mean like 14 or, you know, something like that. And in other words, they just feel that's a better conference for them because it's got better talent.
Well, and kind of along those lines, the team that beat Hampton in the MEAC championship, North Carolina Central, They're playing Texas Southern tomorrow in a first four game in their Co-16 seeds. And have you heard about this controversy that's kind of popped up with that?
No.
I'll fill you in then. There's a writer for the HBCU Digest. J.L. Carter Sr. is his name. Basically, these are two historically black universities, as you know, but they're playing in that play-in game. And what the guy said was that it's culturally offensive and financially short-sighted and a contrived, this is a quote, a contrived college basketball version of the Celebration Bowl. So just maybe kind of some of your thoughts on, I realize you said you hadn't seen that, but I just came across that today. Maybe some thoughts on that covering these teams in the historically black universities.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Refresh my memory again. Who is Central playing?
LAU Brooklyn, right?
North Carolina Central?
Oh, North Carolina Central.
They're playing Texas Southern.
Thank you.
Texas Southern, thank you. Well, I knew that that doesn't really surprise me too much. I mean, Texas Southern, again, is there in the SWAC, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Sounds right.
Okay. Well, those are the two lowest-rated conferences, if I am not mistaken.
Yeah, and the seeds, they came out teams number 67 and 68. So, I mean,
what do you do?
Yeah, like everything else, there are a lot of numbers that came into play in this whether it's seeding or anything else, as we found out.
Exactly, and I thought if Hampton won the tournament, that I was expecting them to be in the one of those first four games as well. And Central, as I said, was the sixth seed of the tournament, so I certainly thought they'd be as well. So I don't know. I mean, the opinions, you know, everybody's got them and everything, but I don't. It doesn't surprise me that those two teams were in first four games.
Dave, my final question for you. Give me a couple of keys for Hampton. If they're going to compete with the Irish and try to pull off the upset, what needs to happen for the Pirates tonight?
Oh, wow. Everything, really. the rebounding you touched on, they're going to have to be able to. They're not going to out-rebound them, but they can, as long as they don't get crushed something on the boards, if they can hold their own, as they say. They're going to have to make their shots, which they didn't do in the championship game that well. And they're going to have to, they're at their best when they're running, and they're at their best when they're getting to the free throw line, because they shoot 78% as a team, which is very good. And that's helped them win a lot of games this year. So if they can do that against Notre Dame, they can keep it respectful for a while anyway. I certainly don't see them winning the game, but maybe hanging in there for a little bit.
If they were to win, though, where would this rank in the history of Hampton basketball?
Well, without question, the biggest moment in this program's history came in 2001 when, as a 15 seed, they went out to Boise, Idaho, and off Iowa State in the first round. They're one of only a handful of 15s that have ever won. That was an absolutely huge moment in the program's history. The city of Boise fell in love with them, and as the people from Hampton pointed out, I mean, it's a, you know, here they are in HBCU and Boise, which is a very predominantly white place, and but everyone just fell in love with them, and it was such a great experience for them. So that is definitely it. It would be hard to top that, but I think it would be close to that.
Was that the coach that ran across the floor and someone picked him up and he started kicking his legs up in the air?
Yes, the one.
Yeah.
One of the classic moments.
It was.
That player's name, by the way, was David Johnson, just like my name.
Easy to remember. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I think I had Iowa State going deep into that tournament. For some reason, I remember that particular upset. Dave, are you in town?
What now?
Are you in town covering the game?
Oh, no, I'm afraid not. I'm back in back in Virginia.
I was going to ask if you enjoyed the lake effect snow today, but see, you're smart. You don't have to worry about it.
Well, we got some here.
Oh, well, then never mind. Enjoy the fun.
Yeah, we got about 3 inches of extremely wet snow last night.
Lovely. Well,
so, yeah, it was disgustingly ugly.
Very good. Dave Johnson covers
South End, so.
Lake Michigan's not been kind to us so far this year. I think we're well over 80 inches now, if I'm not mistaken, for the winter season. Dave Johnson covers Hampton for the Daily Press, Newport News, Virginia. Dave, really appreciate you doing this. Thank you so much for the time, and maybe we'll see you around these parts in a regular season game down the line.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Dave Johnson covers the Pirates for the Newport News, for the Daily Press in Newport News, Virginia. It's the Irish and Hampton tonight, 8:40 pregame, 9 o'clock opening tip, 96-1 WSBT. And again, if the Irish win, they will take on the winner of Penn State and Temple at a second-round NIT matchup.
And a date to be determined.
Yeah, we with the women's tournament here in town, we're not quite sure when that game will take place because the Irish are playing Friday, Sunday in the opening two rounds of the NCAA tournament. Congratulations to them, a number one seed, I believe, for the eighth time in program history, and they'll take on Cal State Northridge in the first game, and then South Dakota State, or an old familiar foe from the old Big East days, Villanova, might be in that matchup. I just remember Villanova used to play that slow, methodical style of basketball. They ended Connecticut's, one of their long winning streaks, many moons ago.
They did. Harry Perretta, longtime coach there at Villanova, and he hasn't always got the best athletes, but you're right, that the style of play, they grind out those possessions, and that's kind of that Philly connection with Muffet McGraw, Perretta, and Gino Auriemma, but those teams used to give Notre Dame fits back in those Big East days.
And Notre Dame's went up a couple of levels.
Yeah.
Since then, and Villanova has
definitely. They've kind of peaked.
Back.
Yep.
Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. Before we go to break, since we're talking about some other things Notre Dame related, earlier today, the Big Ten Conference unveiled their postseason awards. Irish sophomore goaltender Cale Morris, Big Ten Player of the Year, Goaltender of the Year. And here's what Irish head coach Jeff Jackson had to say about Cale picking up those honors earlier today.
Well, I think it's deserved. I mean, he's been the most consistent player on our roster all season long. He had a great stretch, in that streak where he was just almost untouchable as far as his game. And, he's settled in a little bit. But, I thought he played really well for us again on Saturday. And he's a big reason why we are where we are. We wouldn't be in this position if it wasn't for him. And, it's just he's played a real composed game. I'm hoping all this stuff doesn't distract him at all. He deserves the recognition, but he's a pretty, substantive kid. I think he's got his act together, so I don't think it's going to impact him in any way. He's a little bit more cocky than I thought he was just watching him and some of the stuff he does, but you'd never know it if you had a conversation with him. He's just a level-headed kid that he has humility to him, and you have to have that inner confidence, which I believe he does. But, I think that he deserves the recognition for all he's accomplished thus far this year.
Jeff Jackson talking about Cale Morris, and I think he was probably referring to the way Cale sort of twirls his stick as he skates from the goal mount to the blue line during the starting lineups. And he has a little skating style. Got to have a little substance.
Sure.
I don't know if you noticed, when the play is not near him, he just leans up against the crossbar and his glove.
I did notice that those games I was out there this year.
His glove has a big red mark where he puts the glove over the crossbar.
Oh, okay.
And he just looks like he's just kind of eating a sandwich.
Yeah.
Whistling a tune, waiting for the action to come down to him. And Notre Dame will take on Ohio State for the Big Ten title Saturday at 8 o'clock. A few tickets are still available. You can hear the game on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. More on that matchup tomorrow because we have to preview Saturday's game tomorrow because we have no show on Thursday and Friday due to the NCAA tournament here on WSBT. When we come back, rapid fire, 96.1 WSBT. Minutes in front of 7 o'clock. Along with Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Irish basketball at 8:40. That's when the pregame starts. Opening tip, 9 o'clock. The Irish in Hampton in the first round of the National Invitational Tournament. And the NCAA Tournament on WSBT Radio Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Right now, we turn our attention to Rapid Fire.
All right, Darren, NIT tonight, fill in the blank. The thing you're looking for from Notre Dame tonight is blank.
What I'm looking for?
What are you looking for in this game tonight? Don't blurt it out now. I know it's tough.
It's hard. I'll be watching to see what type of big night Bonzi Colson can have. I'm looking for the star power in a game like this. Because it's kind of a glorified exhibition. Let's be honest, there's no big picture after this game, unless you want to win the championship, of course, which I hope the players do. So I'm just going to say Bonzi having a big night.
That's not a bad one. The biggest thing I'm looking for is kind of what we talked about earlier, just how focused are they going to be earlier from a talent standpoint. They have more talent than a lot more talent than the team they're playing, but how mentally and physically engaged are they going to be in this game? We know it's not where they want to be. They're the winningest class, the senior class is, the winningest class in Notre Dame history, 102 wins in their careers coming into tonight. So this is a big shock to the system that they are where they are right now. It's not going to be a big crowd. We're not expecting it anyway, but it's also why they need a good turnout to try to give them some of that energy. And I mean, when you think about it, from a crowd standpoint, it's a great opportunity to get it for $10. It's first come, first serve seating. I mean, if you get there earlier enough, you can be right down by the court for just $10. So that's a pretty good opportunity.
No question.
Get out there and make some noise and support them and give them a chance to play another home game, hopefully, here in another week or so.
They would have a better chance for a big crowd if it was 7 o'clock. 9 o'clock, no,
I just completely agree.
So tough.
I know. It is. And nothing they can do about that.
No.
Fair or foul, referee Ted Valentine getting left out of the NCAA tournament because of that incident with Joel Berry back during the season where he turned his back on Berry.
Disagree with the NCAA's decision. He is, despite the fact people criticize him, he's actually a pretty decent official. Did
right.
a Final Four last year. You don't do that by accident.
Right.
And with all of the clown shows that we see in Major League Baseball with umpires, the things we have seen through the years, yeah, he made a mistake. He apologized to the player, to Roy Williams. He admitted he made a huge mistake. And to not let bygones be bygones, I think that's a disappointing decision by the NCAA. And again, I think he's a much better official than people give him credit for. And I know they get on him because he's very emotional and probably puts on a little bit of a show at times. But if you actually watch him, he's not that bad of an official.
And you brought up a good point about the clown show. Is it, in comparison to some of the
Joe
baseball
West.
Umpire stuff, yeah, it's not nearly as bad. But he doesn't mind the spotlight. Let's say that. I do think that Valentine deserves some kind of reprimand, maybe a suspension for what he did. But I thought that maybe it was better suited if it would have happened during the regular season, especially, I mean, because you mentioned he worked a Final Four. He is a good official. He doesn't mind the spotlight, though.
No.
You know, so maybe this is something that should have and could have happened for something else a long time ago, and maybe it would have kind of locked him in to kind of tone some of this stuff down. It didn't. So I hate to see it during the NCAA tournament because you want your best officials working during the most important games of the year. And when you think about how many games there are in this first weekend, your best officials need to be out there on the floor. So I don't agree with it at the timing of it either.
I guess they aren't going to allow that type of behavior to happen, and they're putting their foot down.
Yep. Now, I know a lot of people around here aren't going to feel very sorry for anything that happens to USC, but despite a second-place finish in the Pac-12 and advancing to their conference tournament championship game, the Trojans did not get an NCAA bid. So do you think they were a bigger snub than Notre Dame?
Well, I haven't looked at their resume, and I'm going to try to do that really fast.
I'll just give you The big number is 34. They had an RPI of 34. It's the best RPI to ever be left out of the tournament.
I'll say this. Their RPI, top 150, record is 16-10. Notre Dame was 8-12.
Yeah.
And against the top 25, they're 0-2. Notre Dame was 1-7. Their non-conference strength of schedule was 62. Notre Dame was 178. RPI, they're 34. Notre Dame was 70. I don't know their quadrant wins.
Yeah.
They beat Middle Tennessee and New Mexico State. Those are their two best wins. They're only two against the top. Well, this shows their RPI. Okay, they beat 33-38, Middle Tennessee and New Mexico State. So they were 0-2 against the top 25. So it's not a great resume. They don't have any wow victories. They lost A&M, Oklahoma, UCLA twice, Arizona twice. So, I mean, again, we've always talked about there's a lot of bad teams on the bubble. And I kind of still feel like USC is better than Syracuse. So I think with that being said, there's an argument they should have been in the tournament.
They probably were. The committee really showed, like when you look at the fact that Oklahoma is in, they've got a win over Kansas. They had those quality wins. They should, and look, you look at Notre Dame, they didn't have enough quality wins. And that's kind of where USC sits as well. Even though they've got a nice RPI, they were 12-6 in their league. The fact is, they didn't beat anybody in their league. All the good teams beat them. Arizona, they lost to Arizona State as well. UCLA, the three Pac-12 teams that made it in. The Sun Devils were and again, when you look at the quality wins part of this whole thing, the Sun Devils finished in eighth place in their conference, but they beat both Kansas and Xavier this season, as well as Kansas State and San Diego State, a couple tournament teams. So I do think USC is a snub, but I do also wonder, because they were one of these programs that were mentioned in this FBI thing, them, Oklahoma State, and Louisville. And you look at Oklahoma State, too. That's a team that's been talked about. You do have to wonder if the NCAA was making a statement by keeping some of those teams out, because I think especially Oklahoma State and USC, they were deserving. And if you compared them to a Syracuse, I think both of them are probably more deserving than Syracuse even, but they're sitting on the outside looking in.
Someone wrote on Twitter today, there's a new rule to live by. Teams like Louisville pay their players to get into the NCAA tournament. Syracuse pays the committee to get into the NCAA tournament. Wish I would have thought of that. Pretty clever.
Not bad. Not bad at all. All right, speaking of the tournament, which number one seed do you think will get bounced from the NCAA tournament first?
This was before the injury news of the day, but I have Virginia as the first number one seed out in the Sweet 16, losing to the 4-seed Arizona. And if you're just joining us, their sixth man. Virginia has lost DeAndre Hunter for the tournament, broken wrist, fourth leading score at 9.2 points per game, terrific defender, and plays almost 20 minutes off the Cavalier bench. So I have, despite the fact I love watching Virginia play, I'm the weird one, I've got them going down to Arizona, and now with this injury, it might make that possibility, the odds grow just a tad bit in favor of Arizona.
Arizona has what could be the best player in the whole tournament. Is he good enough to beat that defense? Because that's still what they're going to make their day on, is that defense. So I know everyone's talking about them, and the injury does change things a little. Though Virginia was 3-0 against Carolina and Duke this year, they still have some really quality wins. I'm more concerned with Xavier and Kansas. I look at them. Xavier, they haven't been in this position before, so how are they going to handle being the number one seed? They have Gonzaga and Ohio State sitting there as the 4 and 5 seeds. The problem with Kansas is, as athletic as they are, they're not that good defensively. They've had to score a lot of points this year to win. They don't rebound that well, especially if Azubuike is still going to be out. And if they're not hitting their threes, they can really shoot themselves out of a game quick. So as good as Bill Self is, he's also only been to two Final Fours in 14 seasons at Kansas. So I've got to go with my alma mater. I think they'll be the first out again. First number one.
I hope not.
I do too. But it's they've been such an up-and-down team this year, and they do have some of those losses, twice to Oklahoma State, Arizona State, Washington, a lot of weird losses that they've had.
I have them going down in the Elite Eight, just food for thought.
Michigan State or Duke?
Kansas.
No, but to Michigan State or to
Duke? Oh, Michigan State.
Michigan State. Okay. Not to give away your bracket or anything.
I'm a Big Ten Missouri Valley honk.
No. All right. Get it. So, the other side of that, which number one seed do you think has the best chance to get to the Final Four?
I have only one number one seed in the Final Four, and that is the Villanova Wildcats coming out of the East bracket, taking down the Boilermakers in the Elite Eight and beating West Virginia and Virginia Tech along the way.
I don't know if I have all of those specific matchups, but I do have Villanova. I do think they are the best chance. And to me, now, before this injury, I would say Virginia was the next best, but definitely Villanova. I just think you could see, and I think you might have alluded to it earlier, there could be a lot of double-digit seeds winning in that East region that Villanova is in. So I have them going. They have the weakest of the two seeds, I think, as well, with Purdue in that region. So I definitely think Villanova is the best chance of the number one seeds.
It's interesting. Our thinking is totally different. I go pretty much chalk in the first round of the East and then craziness elsewhere.
Huh.
We'll see.
Very interesting, because that's where I have most of my chaos, I think, coming. So we'll have to bring the brackets in tomorrow. All right. Minnesota Vikings appear to be ready to make Kirk Cousins the first player to get a fully guaranteed contract. 3 years, reportedly $86 million. Are the Vikings crazy?
Can I answer it in a little different fashion?
Sure.
Since I'm a Denver fan and they checked in on Cousins, if he's going to get $27.5 million per year, I like rolling the dice on Case Keenum for $18, $19 million and mm-hmm. using that $8 or $9 million on another part to help the football team get better. So if Keenum is anywhere close to the player we saw this year, a 69% completion percentage, 22 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, for $18, $19 million in Denver, I think that is a pretty good bargain. So I'm under the belief if you have to pay $28 million to get Cousins, then I think I like the idea of taking a chance on Case Keenum. And Gary Kubiak had him in Houston. He is back in the Denver front office, so he knows him very well, so I respect his opinion.
Yeah, I think the Vikings obviously think they get an upgrade at quarterback, that they've got the better chance with that defense to take that next step next season. But, I mean, you look at the last 3 years, Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Bradford, Case Keenum, in different years, they led the Vikings in passing. And then you've got Sean Hill, who played significant time for parts of two seasons in there as well. It's all because of injuries. And I just think you're going to give almost $90 million for 3 years to a quarterback, the guy who's got the bullseye on his back. And you look at their history, it hasn't been that good. Now, Cousins has been durable. He hasn't missed a start for 3 years. But all it takes is one hit, one fluke, you know, trying to stop, plant, and go, and one bad cut, and that's an ACL or an MCL. So I think it's a really dicey deal, given that kind of guaranteed money to a quarterback.
Sam Bradford's going to get 1 year, $20 million from Arizona. Again, it sounds like Keenum around $18, $19 million, 3 years in Denver, and then totally guaranteed. That is amazing. Kirk Cousins going to Minnesota, and it looks like Teddy Bridgewater might end up with the Jets. So there are Vikings quarterbacks here, there, and everywhere in this whole process.
All over the place. All right, that's rapid fire.
Very good. We will talk about the NIT rule changes that you will notice tonight. Plus, you'll hear from Mike Bray and Zach Hillsland talking about Notre Dame participating in the NIT. Sean and Darren with you. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Hey, Sean Stiers. I'm Darren Pritchett. Sports Beat presented by Budweiser, 96.1 WSBT. The Irish and the Hampton Pirates tonight in NIT first round action. 8:40 pregame, 9 o'clock tip here on WSBT. And one final reminder, if you'd like to watch the Irish in person tonight, $10 tickets, general admission seating. Well, for the Fighting Irish, as we talked about a moment ago with our guest from Hampton, it's all about the interest level of the players involved in an NIT matchup. Mike Bray on Sunday talked about whether he feels like the team's going to be ready to play. And you know what? He didn't have much of an answer. He said, ask the boys in the locker room.
Ask them. It's on them.
How do you do it?
How do you get them to say?
No, I'm not. You know what? It ain't me getting them. It's them getting them now. It's our senior class.
So you're not certain that they're going to buy in?
You need to ask them when they come out. Find out and then call me tonight and tell me how they feel. You know? We're going to have fun with the NIT. You know the character of these guys. I'm sure by tomorrow at noon or by tomorrow at 2 when we practice, they'll be ready to roll. But, you know, they lifted a little bit after the selection show, and they were in a little bit of a funk, to say the least. But, you know, I mean, I told them, I said, it's spring break. I don't have anything better to do. You guys have anything better to do? Let's play. Let's see if we can get back to New York. And
they might be able to come up with a couple things.
Yeah. Florida.
About what time?
I was thinking about Miami, too.
Might be a golf course to get to somewhere in the South.
Yeah, that's right.
But I understand what he's trying to say. But what will this team provide tonight emotionally? We will find out. But on Friday's Leprechaun Lunch, when I was filling in for you on that program with Evan Sharpley, we had Zach Hillsland on, the former Irish basketball player, member of the Notre Dame Radio Network. And I brought up the fact, what I've mentioned a couple of times, and I think you've said the same thing, that we just have so much respect for the senior class, a part of two Elite Eights, ACC champion, Maui champion. They have helped take this program to another level.
Mm-hmm.
And it just hurts me to see this group have to end their careers in the NIT.
Sure.
And as I said, I think it was last night, it's about the players, the coaches. No one gives a darn what I think. I'm just offering my opinion about the NIT and just how this group deserved, I think, a better ending to their career. But if they want to go out and play, that's fantastic. I'm happy for them. But I brought up this scenario to Zach Hillsland, who actually ended his career in the NIT. So here's what Zach had to say when I told him my thoughts on the seniors playing in the NIT.
I finished my career in the NIT, and I can tell you I've intentionally erased all those memories from my mind because I didn't want that to be my lasting image of playing for Notre Dame. And certainly these guys will probably be more mature than I am in that department. But we'll see. I hope they get in. I think they'd be silly not to include them because they could certainly make some noise.
They could make some noise, but unfortunately in the committee's eyes, they did not have the resume. And Tom Noy last night was on the program. He told the story that former Irish forward Jordan Cornett threw away his NIT watch, didn't want anything to do with it. And we had to reschedule Jordan. He was supposed to be on in the 5 o'clock hour today, and he just got back to me. We're going to work it out. We're going to do something tomorrow, I think, during the 5 o'clock hour. So we'll have Jordan tell his watch story about the NIT. All right, just a couple of rules notes for tonight if you listen or watch the game. The lane will be widened from 12 to 16 feet. I think they're trying to clean up some of the physical play by widening the lane.
Yeah.
To me, okay. One way or the other, doesn't matter.
Well, and to me, you're so used to, regardless of where the lane markings are, you're so used to what they've been forever that I don't know how much difference it can really make to a player. But I guess we'll see.
Extended three-point line to 22-plus feet. I like where the three-point line is right now, personally.
Yeah, they moved it back once a few years back. I really don't think it needs tweaking, moving back again either.
We'll see if we change our mind after seeing it in action tonight. The shot clock resets to 20 seconds after a team's offensive rebound.
Huh. Instead of 30 seconds, right?
Yeah. They're trying to add more possessions to the game. Now, that's a lot of pressure on the shot clock person.
Yeah. No kidding.
So you have to push a button that resets it to 20 automatically, or if something else happens, it goes to 30. Well,
yeah, that's true. You've got two different buttons there, don't you?
I mean, when is possession of a rebound? You have it, you lose it. What do you do?
Right.
The lane I'm okay with, the last two, eh. And then 4 10-minute quarters instead of 2 20-minute halves.
Generally, I like the idea of quarters. We've talked about this before in rapid fire. The men's college basketball is the only level. High school, NBA, women's college basketball, they all have quarters. I generally favor it, but then you look at the fact that we have the breakdown of the timeouts, and I would hope they're not all going to be 3 minutes if this was to go forward. 3 minute breaks tonight because you have four media timeouts in a regular half as it is. So now you're going to have four as well in a first half, and that does include the end of the first quarter. So I don't know why you need more time in the timeouts. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of dead time. 12 minutes of dead time per half.
And we were given the timeouts tonight. Excuse me, I had to sneeze. I didn't want to sneeze on the listeners. I had to turn the mics off. But this is what the timeouts are going to be. There's going to be a timeout under 5 of the first quarter, end of first quarter, under 7 of the second, under 3rd of the second, halftime, under 5 of the third, end of the third, under the 7-minute mark of the fourth, under the 3-minute mark of the fourth. So it's going to be a totally different feel for the game.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fouls getting reset by quarters. Not sure about the timeouts. We'll see how it works out. We'll wrap up this installment of Sports Beat next, 96.1 WSBT. Sports Beat tonight brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Sean enjoyed it. Let's do it one more time before 2 days off at the NCAA tournament.
Sounds good to me.
We have Jordan Cornett lined up, CBS Basketball Sports Insider. Gary Parrish will join us tomorrow as well. Irish basketball at 8:40 right now. Here is CBS Sports on WSBT.